Hello and welcome to The Big Fight. Now, it's not that often that a 9-judge constitution bench of the Supreme Court sits down to try and get a view on something of importance to all of us. And that's really what's happening right now. The Supreme Court is sitting to take a look at the right to privacy. Now, it's really coming up more and more in connection with Aadhaar and the various questions around Aadhaar and whether it should be heard by a 2-judge bench or a 3-judge bench. But the right to privacy is something that affects each and every one of us. And that's true today. It's going to be even more true 5 years later. And as digital technologies and technology continues to spread, that question will keep coming back and back. In fact, it's almost surprising that the Supreme Court has not had to constitute a large bench to look at this, because some of the earlier verdicts on the question of whether privacy is actually a fundamental right date back to 1954 and 1962, and obviously the entire world has changed since then. So we've got one of the most illustrious panels I can think of who've done, each of them has done a lot of work in this area, on the right to privacy in particular, whether it should be a fundamental right, what it means for other schemes like Aadhaar and elsewhere, what happens, the other question that came up in the Supreme Court, what happens when individual companies are taking people's data and then making that public? What should be done with that? What happens when there's data you're giving to WhatsApp? What should happen to that? So lots of questions to really discuss out here. And let me start by welcoming Mr. Shailesh Gandhi, former Central Information Commissioner. It's a pleasure, sir, to have you with us. Here in the studio, we've got Vikas Singh, Senior Advocate of the Supreme Court. Abhijit Dwivedi is spokesperson of the ABVP, but has been taking a close look at the entire issue. Also has very strong views on Aadhaar. It's an absolute pleasure and a privilege to have my friend Ashwini Kumar back with us, of course, Minister, Senior Congress Leader, and also Senior Advocate of the Supreme Court. So I did say we have lots of legal luminaries here, because standing next to him, another Senior Advocate, Mr. Vikramjeet Banerjee, a Senior Advocate, Supreme Court, also BJP Legal Department. So great to have all of you with us. And two special guests now whom I want to welcome onto the program, Soli Sarabji, of course, one of the country's most distinguished legal minds, former Attorney General of the country, also in this case advising and a counsel for one of the petitioners arguing for privacy being a fundamental right. So, Mr. Sarabji, thank you so much for being with us. But before I come to any of you, I want to quickly go to somebody who's then going to have to leave. Shankar Iyer, written a book on Aadhaar, written about also accidental India. Is privacy a fundamental right? Is it something that should be treated as a fundamental right? And how does it affect the entire question of Aadhaar itself?
Well, I define this in the following way. Privacy is a natural right because democracy functions on the construct of personhood, on free will. So as far as that right is to be protected, privacy is to be protected. But privacy will function in a moving context in the sense that technology, politics, all of it dictate the contours of privacy. And so there is bound to be limitations on the real definition of privacy. And this will move fluidly as the context changes. In 1974, post-Watergate, the U.S. government passed the privacy law. When 9/11 happened, they passed the Patriot Law, where people ceded much of the rights to privacy. And then again in 2012, after the Obama regime sort of diluted the Patriot Act, came the Freedom Act. So the idea of privacy is inversely and interminably linked with the idea of security. In thus far, I think the dictation would be privacy would have to bow to the issue of personal security. So privacy
you're saying it is something that keeps moving back and forth, which is true. Although in the US, the Fourth Amendment by and large has survived the test of time, which means you can't just go into somebody's house, you can't just take away assets. Yeah. There are Fourth Amendment protections out there. Before you leave us, I wanted to get your take on Aadhaar. How crucial is the question of privacy to Aadhaar, which is obviously something which you've written extensively on?
Really speaking, Aadhaar holds only the demographic and biometric data. So when people say that Aadhaar can be used to snoop on individuals, the law doesn't quite allow that just now. The bank knows your bank account number and the Aadhaar number. The Aadhaar depository does not know your bank account number. The income tax department knows your bank account number, your PAN card number, and your Aadhaar number. But the Aadhaar depository does not know the other details. There are far easier options available, starting with your smartphone and connectivity. But Aadhaar needs to be protected with a data protection law, because today if your data is leaked or lost, you don't really know where to go. The current Aadhaar Act, the 2016 Act, says that the UIDAI will file a case and fight on your behalf. Really, justice demands that individuals be given the right to fight their cause. Second part, privacy and data protection go together. One cannot be achieved without the other. So the government has to move forward and bring in a robust law on data protection, on real-time disclosure of data leakage, and real-time redressal of grievances, so privacy is protected.
All right, Shankar. Well, thanks for joining us with that perspective, you know, helping set the stage for what we need to talk about. Mr. Soli Sarabji, if I could now turn to you and the Constitution bench itself. This is not the first time that the Supreme Court has actually looked at the question of whether privacy is a fundamental right or not. In both 1954 and in 1962, the Supreme Court, not a 9-judge bench, but fairly large benches of the Supreme Court, actually did come in and say that no, privacy is not a fundamental right. If you feel that that needs to be overturned today, what's the reason for that?
Well, actually, in 1954, the issue didn't actually arise. But there is an observation of the Supreme Court which suggests that privacy is not a fundamental right. Then again in 62, the issue didn't arise in the present form. After all, Vikram, please remember, essence of the right to privacy is the right to be let alone. We don't want the government to know what we ate, what we drank, what films we see at home. That's the essence of it. You can't. That's the privacy is a right which inheres in every human being, by virtue of the fact that he or she is a human being. So the question is, the larger bench is considering what the nine-judge bench, to what extent those judgments are correct, are they merely obiter dicta, and if they are correct, do they require to be revisited, or in other words, to be reversed. Now that's the thing going on, it's sub judice, I don't want to say more, I'm appearing in the court, but I'd like to say please remember that privacy, no one claims, is an absolute right. Cannot be. No fundamental right is absolute. But then there should be reasonable restrictions. They can't be just blanket restrictions. So that's the whole thing. That's the balance that will be struck between the right to privacy and the rights of the society, or the interest of security and other things, to some extent override that right, which I said is not absolute, like any fundamental rights in the Constitution is not absolute. It's subject to reasonable restrictions.
But again, the Supreme Court said that this is an important question to settle. It's being linked with Aadhaar, but it has other implications. I mean, I think whatever happens here may well decide other cases. Well, NAS, for example, the criminalization of gay sex, those are some of the questions that can also end up getting linked to the question of whether privacy is a fundamental right or not. What is your take on this? Because fundamental rights are sometimes extrapolated, and I think that's what some of the petitioners seem to be saying. It may not be stated in the Constitution, right to privacy, but sometimes you extrapolate. Like the freedom of press is extrapolated from the freedom of speech.
So no one denies right at the beginning that you have a right to privacy. The question is whether you make that right to privacy into a fundamental right. Because if you know, anyone who knows constitutional law and who's read recent constitutional law will know that Supreme Court has, in Coelho's judgment, said that fundamental rights, the essence of every separate fundamental rights, is part of basic structure in the Constitution. Which means that the moment you treat any right as a fundamental right, it gives extra protection. It's almost ring-fenced from the Constitution. And in the day and age of today, where on the one hand, you have the dangers of the internet, you have the dangers of security, which are increasing, okay, whether you would give such a strong protection is something which needs to be debated, and
so,
it needs to be debated very closely.
If I understood you correctly, what you're saying is, yes, privacy needs to be protected. Privacy is a constitutional right,
yes,
or can be seen as a constitutional right, which must be protected. Don't treat it as a fundamental right, because then it gets special protection above that,
yes,
like freedom of speech and freedom of religion.
On the level of freedom of speech and freedom of speech.
Okay, somebody who's got very strong views on this, and I know you've written a lot on this, studied it extensively for years, would you agree with what he said? Protect privacy, but don't make it a fundamental right.
Please remember, Vikram, our constitution is not only a republican charter, it is a dignitarian charter. Right to privacy as an integral adjunct of the right to dignity under Article 21, repeatedly affirmed by the court, cannot be denied as a fundamental right. It is so inherent to a human person that Justice Krishna Iyer, in Menaka Gandhi's case, again seven judges bench, said, for man to be human, these rights must be synthesized in that person. Right to privacy has been treated at a much higher pedestal as right to dignity, and that right to dignity is the cornerstone of the Constitution. As somebody said, the Constitution is a sublime oration on the dignity of man. And the moment you start encroaching upon this right, which is the corner arch of our Constitution, you pave the way for the state to keep encroaching on liberties. This argument that for security we need ABCD structures are all understandable. And nobody has said that any fundamental right is absolute. But it is necessary to say beyond any ambiguity whatsoever that the right to privacy must be treated as a sacrosanct fundamental right.
Okay, I'm really hearing excellent expositions of what the issues are out here, and I don't think I've seen it articulated quite so clearly for a long time. I want to get everyone else to weigh in on this, because then obviously we're going to have a lot to talk about. And you can see now why the Supreme Court has a lot to think about. Both points, valid points. He says, don't elevate it to a fundamental right. He says that if you don't, the right to human dignity at the end of the day is one of the most, is the most fundamental of fundamental rights. You can't encroach on it. What is your take?
Yeah. The point is, if it is a fundamental right, or even if it is not a fundamental right.
So let's settle that issue first. And we'll come to the contours of it later.
Even if
should it be a
even
fundamental right?
Where you will see the right to privacy existing as a fundamental right, where will you extrapolate it from? Article 21. So because in Binoy Viswan, Supreme Court has said 1491, don't
not
come into picture.
Not just 21, you can extrapolate from other clauses also. You could extrapolate it from 17,
see,
you could extrapolate it from 19.
On 14 and 19, the Supreme Court have recently, when PAN and PAN card and Aadhaar was being clubbed, on that Supreme Court has said 14 and 19 not infringed. On coming to 21, the Supreme Court, if you see that right to everybody, no one shall be deprived of his right to life and personal liberty, except without a procedure established by law. What is the content of procedure established by law? So if there is a procedure, you can certainly take it. So even if you see the submission which is being made by Shyam Diwanji, in there he also says that he has quoted like UDHR, Article 12, or if he goes to the European Convention on Human Rights.
Okay.
So therein we see that even in for the economic welfare, like European Convention on Human Rights clearly says that for the economic well-being of the community, of the country, the right to privacy can be taken. The point which Mr. Iyer has said, that whether the biometric data which is being taken from you, is it the kind of data which can be used in the way in which Foucault says that a society...
No, hang on. Let's not confuse the two issues. I'm going to come to Aadhaar in just a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Let's first try and establish whether there should be a right to privacy as a fundamental right. Then we have to look at whether there should be restrictions on it, on that fundamental right, as they are in every other case. Even for freedom of religion or freedom of speech, there are always reasonable restrictions that are put on that. And third is then, how does Aadhaar kick into all of this? So I take your point. Let me just get you and Vikas on this.
Well, according to me, when the constitution was being drafted, Dr. Ambedkar had suggested that privacy should be included in the fundamental right. And it was deliberated extensively and it was rejected. And it was rejected on the premise that the Constituent Assembly felt that the parliament should make a law for this subject rather than making it a fundamental right. Unfortunately, the problem is that whatever the Constituent Assembly felt and the constitution also envisaged, our parliamentarians are not doing that. If the parliament had, this definitely is a right, and it needs to be a statutory right.
But a fundamental right or a constitutional right have got certain status.
That's what I'm saying. It's not a fundamental.
Which is higher than anything which Parliament will pass.
That's what I'm
saying.
That's
the same argument as going back to 377 that Parliament passed.
So this is not a fundamental right because this was never meant to be a fundamental right. You can't say something to be a fundamental right which the Constitution makers very expressly considered and rejected.
Although, having said that, between 1950 and 2017, a lot of time has passed. The internet didn't exist, mobile phones didn't exist, you know, the ability to snoop on everything did not exist. Right now, given existing technology, we could be having cameras which are surveilling what everyone is doing. We could have ways of getting down information, downloading information from mobile phones, so people sitting out here, they may not even know. The state can come and be present in your life in a manner which is not even conceivable.
That's why
either in 1950 or in 1954, 1962 were the earlier times in the Supreme Court.
That's why I say that it should definitely be protected by a valid piece of legislation which will take into consideration the changing scenario which is emerging.
So let the court put this
time.
Back to. Yeah, I don't want
to.
Yeah.
Just one point. If you make it fundamental right, there are certain values, there are certain things which we can gain. Like if you make it fundamental right, in that case, if suppose something situation like emergency comes in, wherein suppose in case of how the RSS members when the emergency has came, because they had registers and they came to know that these are the RSS members and they were taken away from home. So in that case, if right to privacy is being made a fundamental right, there are certain more layers of protection which will be available, which will not be available if a parliament makes a law. So that's
exactly the reason to have it as a fundamental right.
If the government is despotic, then it is
harmful. Actually, before I come in, let me just get Shailesh Gandhi and get his take on this as well, sir. The situation, we've heard some of the arguments back and forth for this. The situation today and in the modern society is obviously very different to what it was in the previous times in the Constitution. Various benches of the Supreme Court have looked at it as a fundamental right. In your view, does it need to be a fundamental right to look at all the issues that could possibly come up right now and going forward?
I think it is absolutely feasible to read life of dignity into Article 21 and therefore hold that privacy is a fundamental right. But I think with this, there is a caveat. There is a lot of confusion as to what constitutes privacy. And I think we should refer to Article 19.2 of the Constitution, which says, what are the restrictions that can be placed on 19.1a, which gives us freedom of expression, freedom to publish, and right to information? What would affect only reasonable restrictions permitted in 19.2 are affecting decency and morality as far as privacy or personal things are concerned. What constitutes decency or morality is a very limited subject, and enough Supreme Court judgments have said this. Unfortunately, today, even a name is being said as intrusion on privacy. Education is supposed to be intrusion on privacy. Your fingerprints. Let's look at it objectively. Fingerprints are a part of your body. Yes. Things relating to your body, things relating to your house are limits of privacy. And privacy must be protected. But where privacy ends, the right to information and freedom to publish starts. So therefore, of your body, for example, a photograph is also an identity of you. Can it be published? Can a newspaper take photograph? Can a TV camera take a picture and put it on the thing? The answer is yes.
Not everywhere. I think people will get very offended if we as a TV channel come to people's rooms or houses or bedrooms or take pictures of them
of
brushing
a body,
their teeth.
Sexual preferences, then I think
actually,
it's reasonable.
Some TV channels are getting there very soon, so I probably should watch what I'm saying. But yeah, it's theoretically, it would not be accepted if somebody comes, if a TV channel comes, barges into your house and starts taking pictures. It is considered an intrusion on dignity, or it should be considered an intrusion of dignity. You know, he's got an interesting point, though. Where do you draw the line? When you said the right to privacy is a right to human dignity, the question is, where is the line drawn? Your name, for example, your passport number, PAN number, if people are insisting that your PAN number should be quoted everywhere, is that a right to privacy issue? Perhaps not. One of the judges said on Friday that, yeah, look, if someone is coming in and saying, are you cohabiting with your wife? And that's obviously a privacy issue. But whether you should be quoting your PAN number every time you do a transaction, is that a privacy? Is that a dignity issue?
Look, these are specifics that a statutory law can go into. But the main question today that you are debating, and rightly so, is do we elevate the right to privacy to the level of a fundamental right? My submission was and is and will remain yes, because there's no other way you can today construe Article 21. Now, somebody said that the right to privacy was not written into the constitution. Yes, but was the right to health written into the constitution? Was the right to education?
But right to education, right to environment.
No.
Parliament had to pass a law to make it a right.
I'm so sorry. The Supreme Court has said right to education is a part of the right to ensuring the dignity of the man.
Yeah.
Education, environment, clean drinking water, clean air. They were never written into the constitution. They are derivative rights.
Okay.
And all these rights, the Supreme Court has said, that even Part 3 rights individually and collectively lead to right to privacy and right to dignity as a fundamental right. And, you know, constitution has principles for an expanding future. Constitution does not lay down rules for a daily conduct. Therefore, constitution has to be construed in the light of what has happened. It is impossible, in my view, since I'm not appearing as a counsel, it is impossible for the Supreme Court, consistent with its own jurisprudence till date, to say that privacy is not a fundamental right.
All right. Soli Sarabji, I just want to come back to you, sir. Right to privacy should be different. It should be treated as a derivative right. You don't need a new constitutional amendment to be brought in. The Supreme Court should say it is inherent in what are existing fundamental rights. Would you agree with that?
I agree. And mind you, freedom of the press, is it mentioned in the Constitution? It was deduced from other articles of the Constitution and from Article 190A. So the very fact that the privacy is not mentioned explicitly in the Constitution does not mean it's not a fundamental right. Fundamental rights can be deduced from other rights, as has been done in the case of freedom of the press. Where is freedom of the press mentioned? In Article 19, which gives the Charter of Fundamental Rights? No. But it is a derivative right. It can be deduced and rightly deduced from a combination of other rights. And that's what should be done. And mind you, it's an evolving concept. You can't have an exhaustive list of what is privacy or not privacy. Depends on the context. Depends on the circumstances, but the main thing is it should not disturb your right to be let alone in matters that pertain to your personal matters.
Okay.
And which have no element of security or any other consideration.
Okay. The right to be left alone is an inherent part of human dignity. You don't want the state to come and swoop when you don't do it.
I'll take the question. The example is to right to cohabit with your wife. You know, it's right to privacy. But on the question of, let's say, the Domestic Violence Act, you know, these all become relevant questions. So, you know, where do you draw the line? And that's the danger of...
So let me understand what you're saying again. You're saying that, therefore, to look at whether domestic violence is being done or not,
yes,
to look, for example, at whether gay sex is happening or not, you might need to sometimes...
Or domestic violence. Why? You know, there may be domestic violence, there may be child abuse, there may be lots of other things. So, you know, you cannot draw, and that's the whole question, that you cannot raise privacy to be a fundamental right. That's the danger. You know, in the age which we live in today,
Where do you draw the line? Because at the end, I understand, I get what you're saying, that there are times when you will want to say, all right, like for example, and it happens again in the US, which is one of the examples where there's actually a Fourth Amendment. It's not that you cannot go and tap what people are doing, hear conversations, do surveillance, do all of that, but you need to follow a certain really tough procedure. So if domestic violence comes up, maybe you need to get some sort of a magisterial permission or something to go in and investigate exactly what's happening. For a government to have the right to do it without anything else, which is what may be implied, isn't that a dangerous trend?
No, I'm not saying there is an absolute right. So therefore, I said that no one says that there is no right to privacy. Of course, there is a right to privacy. But the whole question is whether you want to raise it to the level of a fundamental right, which would become basic structure of the Constitution, as per the Supreme Court's own views of how it construes fundamental rights.
Let me throw one question to all of you. Let's try and also demystify it from what the legalese is and the constitutional positions is. What is the appropriate amount of privacy that all of us as citizens should be entitled to? Let's try and decide that. In normal circumstances, then you can extrapolate that to rare circumstances where there's reasonable reason to believe that you're a terrorist, for example, or there's domestic violence taking place, or you're planning sedition, or whatever other areas are, we can look for exceptions to that. What is the amount of privacy that a citizen should be allowed to have as his or her constitutional rights? We can decide whether they're fundamental or not, but constitutional rights. Chalesh Gandhi, why don't I start off with you? What do you think we as citizens should be entitled to? What level of privacy?
Very clearly, things that happen in the house, sexual preferences, things to do with the body.
These are issues of privacy, and I think any sane person will concede and say, yes, these are things of privacy. But to stretch it, and we must also look at the fact that 81J of RTI talks of personal information which is exempt, which needs to clear the test that it should be of a nature which should be refused to parliament or state legislature. I go back to Article 19.2, which talks of decency and morality.
Let me extrapolate that a little bit further.
Cannot qualify as an...
You're saying inside the house, I get it, inside the house. Now let's say people are not inside the house. Let's say they're outside the house. All these people sitting out here in the studio right now. Let's say as they're leaving the studio, they pick up their phones and start having conversations with anybody whom they want to have a conversation with. Is it okay for the government to be tapping those conversations, for somebody to be recording it, for a telecom company to be recording it, for someone to be monitoring their WhatsApp messages? If they are about to make a payment, is it okay for somebody to keep a record on that and perhaps release it in the future that, yes, XYZ made this purchase? What about those? That's also part of everyone's privacy.
I would submit that now, in today's age, to call that as part of privacy is too far-fetched. We've had examples of conversations being aired and being publicized. We've had examples of various things like this happening. And I think to say that that is privacy is stretching it too far. I therefore keep saying decency and morality. If, however, you and I may disagree, you may say, no, Mr. Gandhi, I believe a conversation of a telephone would be transgressing the limits of decency and morality. Fair enough. There could be some disagreements on that. But my submission is we should go back to this basic, which unfortunately does not seem to be part of the conversation. Go back to RTI Act, say, will you deny it to parliament or state legislature? Go back to Article 19.2 and say, is it an intrusion on privacy in terms of decency and morality? That is the subjective assessment.
Right, before I come back to everyone here in the studio, Soli Sarabji, let me ask you the same question and put it to him. Because, I mean, that's a moot point. Isn't it part of right to privacy and dignity not to have the government or some or telecom companies or anybody else snooping on conversations? Even if it's not inside the bedroom, if it's outside the bedroom, surely you have a right to say, this is a conversation I'm having with a friend of mine and it's my business and nobody has a right to snoop on it unless there is an evidence and a magisterial warrant or something to say you're planning a terror attack or you're doing something or child pornography or something like that, which obviously those don't come into it. Otherwise, shouldn't that be a part of right to privacy?
Vikram, we are thinking of decency, morality. 19.2 also says reasonable restrictions. So the restriction cannot be, excessive. For example, there may be cases where you require restriction of right to privacy. No one says right to privacy, like any other fundamental right, is absolute. Question is, where do you draw the line? Where do you have the balance? It depends on the facts of each case. But don't make the mistake of thinking that right to privacy cannot be deduced from other provisions of the Constitution. The one fallacy is, where is right to privacy mentioned? Where is freedom of the press mentioned? Is it mentioned in Article 19.1? But it will deduce. Again, there can be restrictions, provided they are not unreasonable, they are not excessive, and not completely unrelated to the object of the act.
Everyone's quick take on this. Where do you draw the line?
Well, in the absence of a proper statutory legislation on this subject, I think it's time for the Supreme Court to lay down, like they did in the Vishakha case or they did in the election matter where they said that politicians will have to declare their assets and their criminality. So they should lay down guidelines that, and you're absolutely right. I mean, our data in this digital world is being shared with almost everybody.
And the center has now, in fact, center is saying, we are going to bring a law on data protection, on data privacy. Now, again, it's becoming slightly, the one way of saying it is that it's one thing for the government to snoop, but individuals should not. If you're having laws on data protection and data privacy, it means you are, in a sense, implicitly saying that there is a certain right to privacy that citizens have.
So that right to privacy, nobody can deny, is there, but it has to be controlled by a statutory right. And the argument that it has to be read as a derivative right, derivative rights are only those which are not explicitly discussed when the Constitution was being drafted. They're only those rights when you discussed only liberty, but you didn't discuss the contours of liberty. So in that, you can bring in aspects like environment, like the other aspect, which education, etc. So, but you can't bring in a derivative right which was expressly discussed and rejected. when the constitution
was being drafted. So you're saying this is not a derivative right, so therefore you cannot introduce it. But now let me ask three of you the basic question of where should you draw the line.
And it is complete, continuously evolving thing.
So today, 2017, how much freedom should I have?
See, the question that whether a phone is being recorded, that's certainly your privacy. It cannot be recorded unless there is a specific procedure which is being followed by the government or by the authority concerned. So that kind of thing cannot happen. But on the other hand,
phone should not be tapped. Presumably, it shouldn't be surveyed. What about the release of biometric data?
That is completely wrong. That is completely wrong. You cannot release
emails, your email address or photographs of yours. Is that right or wrong?
That cannot be revealed unless the person has consented to that particular thing. You cannot release anything. Why should a person be disturbed by sending?
We are discussing in the context of Aadhaar, where all this is not there.
I'm just trying to establish
Aadhaar.
Basically, what the Supreme Court is also saying.
I tell you, Aadhaar could have a situation where somebody commits a crime. Some fingerprints are found. The person who's accused is absconding. Aadhaar has that fingerprint. Although Aadhaar till date is opposing giving that fingerprint to the investigating agency.
I'm trying to establish that Aadhaar is another issue, of course. And there are other issues that which are there. A, the government's collecting it, B, it's for a certain purpose. Three, it's to try and prevent corruption and people from escaping the loop. But some of the problems do come in, like in Aadhaar, there are 210 websites which have apparently started to release Aadhaar data to the public, which...
There
needs to be brought very severe penalty for this.
So that's the problem, right? So if you are saying that some of this should not happen, that's the danger there. One is whether it will be deliberately released, or B, as has happened in Aadhaar on occasion, accidentally revealed. It's always possible.
Just one intervention. The government has clearly said that other than one particular case, when an agency which was being authorized to have the access to the data, there has not been a single case wherein the data from the repository, the central government repository, has been leaked and used. That's the position the government has taken.
What about the 210 websites where some Aadhaar data is available?
The government has come up with a clarification that was available on PIB website also, which you can counter check later on. The government has said there is only one case where the wrong thing has happened. That was happened by the one of the authorized agents.
But the concern is still there, because now to do anything virtually, including, and it's strange because Aadhaar is actually a UPA law which was brought in. But you are now expressing a certain amount of concern as to how far it's going to be taken.
UPA scheme.
I had expressed reservations even as Minister of State for Planning. And I must tell you that there were two issues that always bothered us. It was not that it did not bother us. And I'm really happy that the Supreme Court has found an occasion to discuss this whole matter afresh. But let me just tell you, we seem to be very concerned about the fact that we are living in a digital society, which we are. But please also remember, the 21st century is also an age of rights. And the only political moral order that has received universal acceptance in the European Court of Human Rights, under the United Nations Declaration of Rights, is respect and sacrosanctity of human rights. The moment you concede, derivatively, inherently, as part of man's inviolate personality, as the phrase often goes, that privacy and dignity are integral to the human being and inheres in him by virtue of his humanity, you cannot but conclude that right to privacy is a fundamental right and can only be impacted negatively in the gravest of circumstances. For example, to check a security threat, to check a terrorist attack, child pornography, so forth and so on. So the question that we should be asking is not what is the quantum of privacy, but under what circumstances can this right be limited? Those circumstances must be clearly... And to extend
that, and just to ask you, because we're trying to figure out where the limit should be, and I'm going to throw that question to the audience also in just a minute or two, see what they make of it. One of the things that is happening, and why Aadhaar becomes interesting and important in this, is because here's where you have no choice but to give a certain amount of data. You can't file taxes without it. You have to link your PAN with Aadhaar. You now have to link your PAN card with Aadhaar. So you need to do it. As opposed to other areas, sometimes people say, well, you know, if you're on Facebook or WhatsApp or whatever, you are giving up a certain amount of data. Yes, that's true, but it's being done slightly voluntarily. In some of these cases, you have no choice but to do it, which means if there was to be a data leak or hacking or something else, you would have a certain amount of your data getting exposed.
What I agree with Mr. Sohrabji said, that actually you have to treat it on a case-by-case basis. And, you know, you have to see what your privacy is, what were your privacy concerns, and how the court handles it, and what was the law, what was the emergent need of the government. All these things have to be considered at that point of time. And it's important that it's considered case-by-case basis. Because, you know, speaking on the phone may be a simple thing, but also speaking on the phone, you may be conspiring to, you know, to bomb a railway station. So all these things are,
But that's a slightly rare example. You can't surveil 1.3 billion people because there might be 10 people trying to bomb a railway station.
That's what I'm saying. So you have to
treat it. You won't be able to do it. Frankly, if the government starts surveilling 1.3 billion people, it won't be able to find the terrorists.
What I'm saying is, therefore, you have to treat it on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
And to even to substantiate what you were saying is, you know, I would only like to quote what Madison said, that who should be so brave as to write down the rights of the people? So the moment you put them down, you circumscribe the rights.
Right to be forgotten has now been expressly recognized by the European Court of Human Rights in a judgment.
Right to be forgotten. That's
yes, the right to be forgotten.
All right, let me turn to the audience because I think this is something that affects. Hang on, before I come to individuals, I want to just get a show of hands out here. How many of you think the right to privacy is really important, so important that it should be a fundamental right? Wow, that many of you feel that strongly about it. That's sort of, who doesn't feel it's very important? Okay, why don't you think it's important? Then I'll come to the majority view.
It's not as important to be made a fundamental right, but it is very important to list down the things that protect our data and our privacy.
Okay, so it's important, but not as that important it should be a fundamental. You have a different view.
Definitely, sir. It is an inalienable right. It has been said by Saurabhji and the members on the panel. I guess, let me draw an analogy with the doctrine of indoor management, which is granted to a company, a corporate person. You do not lift the corporate veil until something drastic has happened. Now, here is a natural person. So my right to privacy is absolute. Sorry. And if at all you have to lift that veil around me, you have to have very justifiable reasons.
Okay, I think that's really very, very well put. Let me get some other views. Yeah.
So, sir, I don't think that it is as important to make it a fundamental right. Just by giving an example, say if I am in a metro talking to somebody and a random person is listening to my conversation, apart from being a creep, is he also a violator of my fundamental rights? Or if I am in the confines of my own bedroom and at night my mother comes to check on me, is she a violator of my privacy? This has to be taken into consideration.
Another lady here.
We can talk about right to privacy, but I agree with sir here that you have to talk about where you limit the right to intervene in your privacy, because we talk about the right to freedom of speech is a fundamental right in today's day and age. But the moment you post a Facebook status, that can ignite a riot somewhere.
Yeah. And so that's the freedom of speech. Now, when it comes to privacy, here's a question I'm going to ask some of you who are the younger generation. You these days have absolutely no hesitation in posting WhatsApp, Facebook, pictures of people getting drunk, having a party, doing all sorts of stuff. And that's okay. That's a public thing. People tweet all sorts of stuff, which I think, are you really tweeting this out for the whole world to see? But they don't have a hesitation. In the new era, is privacy still important then?
Of course it is, because certain rights you give up voluntarily. Like if you are Facebook, as you mentioned, if you choose to be on Facebook, you're aware of the, you should be aware of the fact that you're giving up a hell lot of information to be there. But what I'm talking about, why I invoked the right to freedom of speech was because when that gets impinged, at least, if I'm having a private conversation with somebody and I say something that might seem anti-national, and do I get to be prosecuted for something that seems like sedition because I'm having an opinionated private conversation with somebody?
Press the pause button there. I think she just touched on a really, really important point that I want to actually take back to Soli Sarabji. I think she's touched on a very important point. So, Soli Sarabji, I think there's a very interesting point that has emerged from this lady out here. If you don't have the right to privacy, does it eventually come back into the right to freedom? Because if you think that the government is listening to everything that you're saying and everything that you're doing and you're being under constant surveillance, then as she said, will you think 10 times before saying anything, talking about things, gossiping with friends? Because who knows, somebody's listening to this, recording this, tomorrow it can come back and be held against me. So eventually, if I understood you correctly, she says that eventually it comes back not just to dignity and other things, but to freedom.
You can't have an exhaustive catalogue of what is privacy. But please remember, it's an evolving concept, and the fact it can happen in some cases wrongly by the government does not mean it does not exist. The importance of being it a fundamental right is that fundamental right cannot be overridden by statute.
Yeah.
It requires a constitutional amendment. If it's not a fundamental right, mere statute can do away with it. But the main thing, Vikram, is, again, balance, the right balance.
Right.
Again, I repeat, not absolute, but it must be, can be overridden by, I mean, considerations of real national security in of a real nature. Of a
all right. Important can I just come to both to all of you, actually, on her point?
I'll just take her example.
Yeah.
I think, she's, the government is sort of, whatever statement I make doesn't make me anti-national. But it depends on who she is. I'll give you the concrete example. If she is, for example, a part of a ring which is involved in activities which enemy
get a
the
warrant,
government.
Get a warrant so, and go after
so
her.
So that's what
not,
I'm saying.
She's hanging with a bunch of friends in Starbucks. They're having a conversation.
Yes,
and they're saying, I don't like this government.
Yes.
Now, people today, we are a free country. With their free societies, the people are having those conversations,
yes.
Right? But I think her point is, if I'm not paraphrasing you wrongly, her point is the fact that there's a possibility that the government could be taping, recording this and can come and use it against me is the inhibiting factor for freedom. Is that what you're saying?
1984, George Orwell's 1984. Yes. I mean, if you can hear everything I see and police me for the thoughts I have, I mean...
I'll flip it around. I'm flipping it around. Of course she has a right to protection. And no one says that. And no one is, of course, without a genuine concern, the government will not be... it does not have the capacity to do it, and no one is willing. But
who's going
on
to
the
take
other
a
hand,
on that?
But on the other hand, if you flip
I mean,
it
we
around,
don't want to be reduced to the situation
if
which
you
happens
flip it
in,
around, those
you know, in
who
Soviet
are,
Russia, if you had to have a conversation, you had to go into a bathroom and have a chat with somebody.
But let me put it this way.
That.
If you
so
flip
binary.
It around, those who are terrorists...
So binary that
no, those who no, are...
But
those who
the
are,
point is you have to find the line,
those
right?
Who are
where
actually,
is the line going to be drawn?
Those who are actually involved in the process of undermining the state in whatever capacity,
nobody
they would then take that defense in court,
yes.
Saying that you could not have violated my privacy,
but that
and
happens,
therefore that is
on,
the
hang on,
concern.
Hang on, hang on. That happens all the time in the United States, where people do have to be careful, they have to get federal warrants, they have to do all of that, otherwise, somebody can come and say Fourth Amendment rights.
That
you didn't
exists
have the right
even
to
even under CRPC.
No,
you have to take it. There is a procedure. If you follow that
yes,
procedure,
but
you
Vikram,
can go ahead
yes,
with it.
But the point is,
they can go ahead with it.
No, I'm saying that where all does privacy affect? You were talking about certain clauses where privacy is
yeah.
potentially derived from the right to privacy is fundamental right. She's rightly saying it could be derived from freedom as well.
You made a slight distinction between freedom and dignity. I'm sorry, that is not permissible for the simple reason. There cannot be dignity without freedom, and there cannot be freedom without dignity. Freedom, dignity, and equality have been treated in jurisprudence as covalent, reciprocal, and equal values. These are the three terms that have been used by legal philosophers. So dignity, freedom, equality are facets of an overall human personality which we want to espouse in the country. At the core of this whole debate is what is the kind of society we want.
Okay.
What is the kind of life that people must have in a free, open, and liberal society? That's the core.
Okay.
From reading,
assuming,
Lord
of course, we do want a free, liberal, and open society. Which
you have to have dignity, you have to have freedom.
Just go and read Article 7, Article 8. You go to United Universal Declaration of Human Rights, you just
yeah.
read it. It's a fallacy which we are creating in our mind that individual right is so important,
hang
so
on.
Cherishable. So in
move
any
away
case,
from jurisprudence, read. If you hear the reference that she referred to...
The jurisprudence has to be answered
by
jurisprudence
the reference she
only.
Referred to, 1984, you don't necessarily want Big Brother to be watching you.
Yeah, this should not
That's,
be.
I think
the name which I...
But Facebook
is. If you see...
Facebook is. Now, Big Brother may not be,
yeah,
but Facebook
yeah,
is.
If you
well,
see...
That's voluntary.
Facebook is
according to her, that's
but then,
voluntary.
But then the point... And let me get some more people want to come
Vikram,
in with this lady there.
Vikram,
the point which is being made is that Facebook, you're voluntarily putting it out.
Vikram, can I get
whatever
on
you're
to
putting
what,
it out.
Vikram,
yeah.
can I get on to what she said?
Yeah.
First, there in India, even today, notwithstanding Aadhaar, even today there is a law which says that even if you are discussing some crime on the telephone and it is just snooped in by an authority, that snooping can't be used in a court of law. So we are actually discussing something which is not there. Today, the law as it stands today, notwithstanding Aadhaar, a conversation which is actually discussing
yes,
a grave crime, That conversation can't be used in a court of law.
But I think
that conversation can only be used if it is authorized by law. So the protection that is there.
But that law could change, right?
No, I think the constitution. So today we are discussing.
The constitution bench is trying to do right now is try and figure out what sort of a country are we heading towards.
We are discussing,
what should be the norms?
We are discussing this program today as if the parliament has made some law that you can swoop into any conversation and whether that is permitted or not. That's not the situation today in this country.
It's a fair, it's a fair clarification.
The law is very clear.
It's a fair clarification. Let me get one more view from the lady and then I'm going to get final thoughts from all the panelists. Yeah.
I think to nullify the right to privacy because there are terrorists out there is the same as nullifying the right to freedom because there are murderers out there, or the right to religions because there's messed up cults out there. That is ridiculous.
Okay, I think that's again rather well said. Just want to get final thoughts from all of you on the specific question of how all of this may or may not roll into Aadhaar, which is of course one of the major issues that is behind all of this. Whatever the decision the Supreme Court now will take on the question of privacy as a fundamental right, how do you think it is or is not going to affect Aadhaar? Why don't I start with you, Soli Sarabji, and then get thoughts from everybody else.
It would affect in the sense that it depends if the disclosure, if the intrusion is in your private matters, which has nothing to do with the security of the state, or if it is related to matters which are personal, a right which every individual has inherent in him, the right to be left alone, then I think it will be struck down. I mean, this is just my impression. I'm arguing the matter, so I can't say anything more. But then the Supreme Court may strike it down or may read it down.
Aadhaar is, of course, it's a scheme that is there for people. Yep, you know, people have to use it if they want to get certain state services. That's also been a subject of some discussion. How will privacy affect all of this?
In my opinion, the data given to Aadhaar, which is the information they have, my thumbprints, my iris scan, my name, etc., my address, I do not think any of this, if given, would be an intrusion on my decency and morality. And if it is not, I would submit that I'm afraid that why are people not going back to the Constitution and saying what are the things that are part of privacy? And if this is what it is, I see Aadhaar as being perfectly legitimate and I see no real problem with it.
How would it affect Aadhaar?
To me, Aadhaar, the data, the purpose for which it is being collected and the data security that the Act itself has, there is some data security. There is a 3-year sentence if somebody violates, gives out this data unauthorizedly to somebody. So the purpose, which is basically to ensure that people who are fake identity are eliminated, people with shell companies are eliminated. The PAN numbers are all linked so that actual taxpayers are before the government and it's not just fake identities which are, you know. I think that is absolutely no problem as long as the data remains with the authority for the purpose for which it is collected. The moment it is misused, of course, that is a separate issue.
Aadhaar.
On the Aadhaar, I would like to tell that there have been 400 crore transactions. There have been 49,000 crore rupees, as sir was saying, which has been saved due to the use of Aadhaar card. And as far as the case is concerned, if Aadhaar card, if the data with Aadhaar from Aadhaar is in India, is collected by a central repository authority, and unless you start considering that the state is so despotic or dictatorial, as the people in considers state as an kind of enemy in Europe, then otherwise there is no problem in Aadhaar. And Aadhaar could exist even if the right to privacy is considered a fundamental right.
Okay, don't consider the state to be an enemy necessarily.
Yes, I don't.
Necessarily.
I don't say that the state is always an enemy of the people, no. And I do concede that Aadhaar, when it was conceptualized, the way it was conceived, was intended to benefit the people who were deserving of targeted subsidies. And that is how Aadhaar should continue to be used. My only question is, if the Supreme Court in its wisdom finds that the Aadhaar platform as presently constructed has the real possibility of invading the privacy of people beyond the purposes for which it was intended. To that extent, there should be technological solutions to that extent,
but if the data has not been linked, Aadhaar, even if it's being extended elsewhere, and I'm being devil's advocate out here, Aadhaar essentially is an identifier. You can, and that helps in tracking corruption, it helps in tracking black money, it helps in tracking tax evaders, it helps in making sure everyone's paying their taxes, GST is operating, shell companies. Potentially having an identifier like social security in the US is not a bad thing if it's not misused. So to that extent, how is that Why does that not survive any question?
It's a tried saying that it is not important, not only important to do the right thing, but to do it in the right way. If you can ensure the purposes for which Aadhaar was intended without invading the privacy of a person, by all means do it. And that should be the endeavor. The Supreme Court should, in my respectful submission, be looking at how to reconcile the benefits of Aadhaar with the imperatives of privacy as a fundamental constitutional construct.
And I guess we're going to hear a lot more about that next week. So final thoughts from you.
I think my final thought on this is that Aadhaar is an instrument for social benefit. It is an instrument for economic benefit for the weakest of the weak. If today the interpretation of the Supreme Court pushes up right to privacy on a certain level, which affects the implementation of Aadhaar, it would be a crying shame.
All right. Thank you all so much for having joined us with those really, really interesting thoughts on where we should perhaps go from here. Of course, this entire debate and discussion is going to continue in the Supreme Court, so do keep your eye on that. It is one of the more interesting questions that's come before a constitutional bench of the Supreme Court, and let's see what the final decisions on this matter are. You're watching The Big Fight. We'll be back next week.